morning. Welcome to the Australian Early Finance Briefing for Saturday, the 1st of August 2020. My name's Nick Hurley here in Melbourne. Yesterday we had the head of Regal Funds Management, an Australian active investment firm, predicting that they see a huge rally in resource stocks as a result of all the fiscal stimulus coming up from the coronavirus pandemic. Philip King says, the fiscal stimulus we're now seeing in Australia and most countries around the world is the largest since the Second World War. The Second World War preceded a golden period for Australian resource stocks, where mining stocks in Australia went up 20 times over the 20 years through to 1970, which culminated in a bubble. So maybe Chinese stimulus through infrastructure may drive this, and there may be better days ahead for our resource sector. Now, we've touched on the iron ore boom we're currently seeing quite a bit recently, and the Brazilian miner Vale, which has at times been the largest iron ore miner in the world, has said it will consider expanding its biggest and best mine due to the amazing Chinese demand. So their flagship S11D mine would be expanded to about another 10 million tonnes, and they want to restore within 2 years about 100 million tonnes of iron ore capacity that's been shut down, mostly due to tailings dam disasters and coronavirus issues in Brazil. Just as a measure, Australia exported, I think, just over 800 million tonnes in the last financial year. So it's still fairly small in that regard. But when you think about 100 million tonnes of extra capacity, that's about the same as the hot topic of the iron ore industry, which is the Simandou iron ore mine in Africa, in Guinea. And that one is expected to produce about 100 million tonnes. However, it has very little infrastructure and is about 600 to 700 kilometres from a port. So there's obviously a lot of costs, and analysts at UBS have said the cost of each new tonne from this Simandou mine would be about 3 to 4 times more expensive than developing replacement mines in Western Australia. Moving more directly to China now, we had the Chinese Communist Party's Politburo meeting on Thursday, and interestingly, the statement that they came out with following that meeting missed any reference to the Belt and Road Initiative, which has caused a lot of controversy here in Australia, particularly in Victoria, where we've had the Victoria state government actively support and sort of sign a non-binding agreement to participate in the program. And, much to the aghast of the federal government. So this is an interesting development because it, as Nomura, the Japanese investment bank, states, it indicates a clear digression from the previous national strategy. It's a retreat from the sort of China outward into the world approach that they've been following since 2013. And it seems to be more along the lines of China building a more self-reliant economy that, is more internal demand, less export driven. And that probably is due to the CCP wanting to protect itself by, focusing the country of 1.4 billion people to more inwardly oriented perspectives. They would be less exposed to Western ideas of democracy that is obviously the number one threat to its power in China. Okay, moving to Japan now. As a result of the Fukushima nuclear disaster back in 2011, Japan made a decisive decision to move its reliance from energy production from nuclear back into coal. And in 2019, the coal generation produced 32% of Japan's energy needs, and it's expected that even by 2030, it will still make up about 26% of their energy consumption. Now, Bloomberg New Energy Finance says that Japan plans to build about 22 new coal-burning plants, and that is to replace about 100 inefficient coal-fired power plants that you know, won't meet sort of modern emissions targets. So they turned on one of these new ones on the weekend. It's called the Matsura number 2 unit. It's very efficient. It uses ultra supercritical coal power generation. It's in line with the government's policy of expanding efficient coal power units while phasing out inefficient coal units. That was someone from the Japanese Ministry of Economy, Trade and Industry. So still some possibility there for Australia's huge coal exports that maybe Japan might soak up some of the supply. Okay, we mentioned last week that Tesla is, you know, an enormous company in the US. It's now worth about $277 billion. But intriguingly, it's not part of the S&P 500 index. Now, we mentioned that indices have all these quirky rules and some of it can be a bit opaque. But generally, the indices that are most well-known, most trusted, and most understood are the ones people gravitate towards. Now, the S&P 500 has this rule that new companies must have been profitable in their most recent quarter and over the past year before being added. Now, Tesla's famously, you know, been burning cash up until just over a year ago. So now Tesla qualifies. In fact, if it was to go in today, it would be the 17th largest company in the S&P 500 instantly. And that would have an index weighting of 0.8%, which is between PayPal and Pfizer. So definitely a big name. Now, the complication this will add is in today's world dominated by passive index tracking funds, that will mean all these passive funds will have to buy a ton of their stock. And Vanguard estimates, one of the world's largest ETF operators, that passive funds will need to sell about 35 to 40 billion of shares in the rest of the index to make a hole big enough to purchase the Tesla holding required to reflect the index weighting. Now, there could be some issues with the timing of that as well. The index administrator, S&P, can give as little as a couple of days' notice that a name's going in. So it could be this massive frantic scramble to buy, you know, up to 40 billion of the stock. But it could also wait till they do a quarterly rebalance in September. But it certainly may add a lot of volatility to the market, whichever outcome comes to fruition. Now, Bloomberg mentions that the US government did a sort of study about whether adding and company becoming part of the S&P 500 index would actually hurt its performance going forward. And the research found that the stock typically rallies prior to the announcement or prior to addition to the index over the preceding year. And Tesla's up almost 300% over the last year. So typically once it actually goes in the index, they found that the price goes down. Firms included in the index perform extremely well and the year before, and then they drop off. So that could potentially mean that Tesla may not have further to run, even though a lot of people will be buying it. And moving to the markets now, the US has opened down again, down about 44 basis points, 50 minutes into the open. It was down 40 basis points yesterday. That was due to negative economic performance that we mentioned, plus the results from the tech companies was largely positive, particularly Apple. That hit a new record high and is now doing a stocks 4-to-1 stock split. And the Australian dollar hit a recent record, high since March last year of 72 US dollars. And that partly drove our negative performance we saw here yesterday. And that is your briefing for Saturday. Have a great weekend and see you next week. Thank you.
This podcast is for investment professionals only and should not be relied upon by private investors. The podcast is provided for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial advice. The values of investments can go up or down, so you may get back less than you initially invest.